Hey Caffeinators, welcome to the Vet Tech Cafe. The Vet Tech Cafe is a podcast centered around veterinary technicians and nurses, hosted by myself, Dave Cowan, and my good friend Jeff Backus. We strive to discuss current issues facing our profession and give our colleagues a voice and a medium to enter into these discussions. Our guests are experts in the veterinary field that we hope can help our listeners work towards dealing with these issues, as well as coming up with solutions that can lead to change. If you have a question, comment, or would like to be a guest on the Vet Tech Cafe, please contact us at vettechcafe@gmail.com, or you can find us at our website, vettechcafe.com. One thing we would ask of you, our listeners, is to rate and review us on whatever podcast platform you're listening to. We're not exactly sure how or why this helps us, but apparently it does. So without further ado, come on in, grab yourself a cup of coffee, and get ready for another episode of the Vet Tech Cafe.
Hello, Caffeinators. Welcome back to another episode of the Vet Tech Cafe, where free childcare is always a work benefit. special shout out to our friends to the north, our Canadian Caffeinators. Grab your cup of Tim Hortons and come join us for another episode here. We'd like to thank all of our Caffeinators here in the U.S. and abroad for your continued support. To our Patreons, thank you so much for your continued support. If you're new to the Vet Tech Cafe, go ahead over to vettechcafe.com. All the information is there about Dave and I and who we are, why we do this podcast, our goals with it, all of that. You can follow along on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, and then we post our Taproom episodes, which is kind of our spinoff series, to YouTube. You can check out Vet Tech Cafe on YouTube, and the video of our Taproom episodes are there. So check us out. We're really, really glad you're here. Dave, how's it going out there? I know it's only been a day since technically last we spoke, but what's new?
I had a stark realization of farm life. We lost, I don't know if you've seen me talking about Becky, our basic white chicken. I found her non-responsive in the yard today. So that was a bit of a sad thing. For those of you that don't know, Becky has a wonderful story where, a friend of mine, Sarah, posted on Facebook about four, maybe 5 years ago, saying, "I found this chicken at a gas station. And what do I do with it?" Because she lived in a small apartment. She's like, I can't take this chicken home. And I showed it to Robin. She's like, we want that chicken. And we got Becky, and she had a little bit of road rash. She's a meat bird. So we figure she fell off a truck on the way to processing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we cleaned her up, and we had her. And Sarah was like, "You're not going to eat her, right?" I'm like, "No. She's got a name. We don't eat things with names." Yep. So she was our kind of our matriarch, and because she was so big, she had trouble getting into the coop at night. So she would always roost on the beams just below the door. So that was our nightly routine: was we'd go out, we'd put Becky in, and close the door. Yeah. And this morning, I was heading out for another run, and I saw her laying in the yard like she normally does, because she's an older, large bird, so she does a lot of resting. And I was like, that doesn't look right. And lo and behold, she was not responsive. She had no wounds, so I feel like she didn't get attacked or anything like that. We've had that in the past too. But you know, sad day for us. But we're thankful in the fact that we gave Becky probably another 4 or 5 years that she wouldn't have had, because all estimation, she was on her way to slaughter. So I'll have to have a beer for Becky tonight. But
absolutely, I will do that. Sad day at Lone Cedar Farm for sure. Yeah, absolutely. Well, my best to you guys, and absolutely kudos to you guys for taking her in and giving her, another handful of years that probably she had never experienced anything like that up to that point. Anyhow, and then those extra sunset years. That's awesome.
I also know this is probably just going to be the introduction to, well, we're down a bird, so we can get more birds.
Right. Yes. We now have an open spot, and usually, you know, you go to get one and you find three. And
I mean, we normally lately the way that we've gotten them is we get them through the mail as day old chicks, and then we raise them in the bathroom. And I actually enjoy doing that, because it, you know, you kind of bond with them. Mm-hmm. And you know, you can raise them that way. You feel more of a connection, because we have a couple newer ones that we got as like, they were kind of teenagers when we got them. So we couldn't really touch them all that much, but the ones that we raised by hand, those are the ones that are like, Those are our favorites, really.
Yeah, yeah, for
but
sure.
We'll see if I can stave off that conversation for a couple months.
at least for a couple weeks.
Or at least until this episode uploads and then she hears it and says, yeah, we do have open spots. We do need more chickens.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, boy.
How are things going out there? Weather's still absolutely perfect?
It's still hot. We're still 2 days away from colder weather and rain. I can't wait. I was looking at the forecast today and it's rain Thursday, Friday, off day Saturday, and then like Sunday through Saturday next week, a high chance of rain for us, and I just cannot wait. Although I will say I'm learning that rainy days inside with a toddler are rough.
Yep.
So I don't know, day two, day three, and on, I might have a different viewpoint. But right now, it's 85 degrees in January, and I am not a fan of that. So I'm looking forward to colder weather.
Let me know when you want to make that winter switch. You can live here, and I will live
there. We'll do that house swap. Well, let's go ahead and jump in, because we've got an awesome episode today. And Caffeinators, you guys know we don't often talk to non-veterinary technicians, but I think in very short time frame here, you'll see why we're doing this episode. So we have the famous Doc Jim coming by the Vet Tech Cafe today, and this is a big one for us. If you're not familiar, Dr. Jim Hurrell, or Hurl if you're a West Coast family member, but Dr. Jim Hurrell is a veterinarian, graduated from Michigan State in 1974. After owning his own small animal practice for a few years, he moved into the education sector, and specifically vet tech education, our education. He's been the program director at Macomb Community College in Michigan from 1981 through 2004, then program director at Delgado Community College in New Orleans from 2004 to 2012, then moved into the same role at Penn Foster in 2012, and is now at Blinn College in Texas as their program director. He's long been a champion of veterinary technicians, obviously with that work history, and an advocate for our education the whole way. So really, really fun episode, I think, today, guys. Dr. Jim, first off, what can we get you for a cup of coffee? And welcome to the Vet Tech Cafe.
My wonderful fiance lady, Teresa, is a coffee person. I'm not much of a coffee person, but I usually do, believe it or not, Canada Dry Ginger Ale Zero.
Oh, so okay.
Is the zero the sugar? No sugar?
No sugar.
Okay.
I'm trying to be fairly decent. I've not always been decent at my eating throughout the years, and my body tells me that. So
yeah.
Have you ever had ginger beer?
No.
It's good. It's good.
It's actually good.
It's got a stronger taste.
Really?
It's one of the main ingredients in a mule. And at our house, we're fond of the tequila mules.
Wow.
But check it out. It's not alcoholic. It's just, I don't know what the difference is between ginger ale
fermented.
And ginger beer.
Yeah.
Interesting. I'll have to check
But neither one
that
has
out.
Alcohol. So yeah. Check it out. Cool. It's good.
Yeah. All right. Well, if you don't mind, I know I kind of talked about, some of your program director work, but talk about what got you into veterinary medicine, what kind of got you headed down that path. And then we're going to ask a little bit later about transitioning from private practice medicine into kind of what you're doing now, but kind of talk about a little bit what got you into veterinary medicine and what you're doing today.
Thank you. First of all, I'm just honored to be with you all today. It is such a treat for me to come and really get on my bandbox about your awesome profession. I have loved it since day one when I was in vet school. Just a brief background. It's interesting how people end up with careers or education.
Yeah.
When I was a little kid, I loved looking at microscope stuff from the pond water under the microscope at home. And I thought I wanted to be a microbiologist because they use microscopes and they use biology. I had no clue what a microbiologist did. Went to Michigan State, and by my spring semester, first year, I went into the vet school, and the assistant dean, Dr. John Newman, known as Black John, he was a tough guy, but he loved me for some reason. He kind of ferreted out people that had the heart, and he spent a lot of time with me helping me set up my procedures. I could have gotten into vet school when I was 19, but I was really immature. And I, at one point, took physics 238, which was the electricity and magnetism lecture lab. And even after the instructor in the lab checked my work, when I pulled the switch, I blew out all the lights in the physics building. And so I thought, I'm not doing this. So I went in to drop the course, but I found out my new advisor after 90 credits was Dr. Newman. And I thought, oh, he'll give it to me. And so I went in, I asked him to get a drop thing. And he said, Mr. Harrell, I sense you're not committed to this profession. If the entrance committee senses it, you're not getting in. I'm going to hold this card for 24 hours, and I want you to call me in 24 hours and tell me one of two things. Dr. Newman, I will keep doing that course, and I will apply to vet school. Or you'll say, Dr. Newman, I'm changing my major. Please sign the waiver.
Mm-hmm.
So 24 hours later, immature me, I called, and I was afraid to see him again in person. I called and said, I'm dropping it. I'll change my major, Dr. Newman. So he said, okay, fine, just pick up the card whenever you can. So went through, I was an undergraduate, I taught undergraduate, I got an undergraduate degree in biology education, taught junior high for 2 years, knew that was not my calling, even if it was science and coaching basketball at the ninth grade level. I was so frustrated because all of a sudden it was a union, kind of a negotiation year with union management. And they pink slipped all the teachers that did not have tenure yet. I was one semester from tenure. So I said, I'm done with this. I'm going back to vet school. So I drove all the way up to Michigan State and went into the vet school place. And there was Dr. Newman out and he welcomed me back with open arms. It's like, he knew I was coming back at some point. And I was one of the first ones to get into my vet school class after I was interviewed by two doctors. And Newman didn't have any input, I don't think, on that, but maybe he did. But it's been a great journey since then. I was kind of a gamer, which I talked to my students about being a gamer, because if I could figure out the professor, I didn't have to study as hard. And that bugged some of my classmates, because I was a B student. I could have been an A student if I really wanted to work. Maybe I'm telling too much here, too much information.
No, it's all in the past now, right?
The crowd you're talking to, I think that'll resonate very well with. This is a vet tech program, not a veterinarian program.
Also the term gamer means something different now.
It does.
Yeah,
And I don't do the games, but I was gaming my profs, and I could figure them out pretty easily and do pretty well. I got my B's and a couple of A's here and there, but I played for the B, and it's okay, because I was really working some great weekends at a high quality veterinary practice with six doctors. So anyway, graduated in 1974, went to work for, you shall remain nameless. It could have been Hitler or Attila the Hun. I'm really not sure which one, but it was horrible. I thought, oh, I've gone to school all these years and this guy is just horrible. And so I quit, or did I get fired? It all happened the same day. I was there for 6 months. Our first daughter was born in November 24th, and I was without a job December 1st. So I set up my own practice, and it opened up February the following year, 75. And it was an interesting struggle, but I learned a lot actually from the bad guy, because he was a good businessman. And so my practice started to thrive well. But I still, and I didn't have a technician at the beginning, but I hired one from Michigan State, and it was awesome. Julie Jones was her name. She and I are still great friends on Facebook, and she was my pedestal technician when I taught. And I did some part-time teaching in a program in Detroit that's now defunct, but I just loved the teaching at the college level, not junior high anymore. And so then all of a sudden, Macomb Community College was having trouble getting someone to stay with a brand new program. They had had, I think, five instructors in six semesters. And I just said, oh, I'm there. And so I did both my practice with an associate. Finally, I hired an associate and then I had to decide, both of them were full time and I couldn't do both of them. And I decided to sell my practice to my associate and teach full time. And I've never looked back, because my gift is teaching and encouragement. Those are my gifts that I have. And so I started in 81. So that would mean, I guess, about 43 plus years full time mm-hmm. as a program director and a college professor for four wonderful ABMA accredited programs that you mentioned previously, Jeff. And I have loved every minute of it. I've had good administrators. I've had horrible administrators, but I've always loved my students. And it's just been awesome to watch the journey. And I'm still friends on Facebook. Facebook's been an amazing thing to see. I'm still friends with some of my students way back from the 80s and 90s Michigan. And it's just a delight to stay in touch with them and see not only their career journey, or perhaps they've opted for retirement or motherhood, fatherhood, whatever it might be. And it's just been kind of neat to see maybe change of careers. And yet still, I felt that my heart was always strong to teach soft skills. And, you know, there's 220 plus ABMA accredited programs in the country. They all teach great academic and clinical skills. They have to get ABMA accreditation, but very few teach the soft skills strongly. And I was always a strong advocate of that in all four of my programs. And I felt that my students would go out when they graduated. I've seen over 3,000 graduate, if you can believe that, in 43 years. Wow. Not all of them made it, but the ones that made it, they wanted to make it. And that's really the difference. But so many went out with great leadership skills, and to see them become national leaders, it's just, some of them are now professors or program directors. Some of them are national leaders doing awesome things in this great profession of yours. And so that's kind of been my journey. I loved teaching from the start, especially when I went full time. And again, my strengths early on were clinical skills, but once I was away from practice for a few years, I've really stayed strong on teaching anatomy, physiology, the foundational course that all students must be strong on, because as far as I'm concerned, I'm a little biased, but I think that every case that comes in the front door is an anatomy case, whether it's pathology, diseased anatomy, or preventative health, healthy anatomy. So they need to learn that foundational course well. In fact, every other course in the program is clinical anatomy, whether it's pharmacology, radiology, whatever it might be. So, but the soft skills, I'm a strong advocate for soft skills, because if we can really help students to learn how to be leaders, and they are leaders, they just may not be aware or may be fearful of that, but with the right proper encouragement and a little bit of swag, I digress for a minute. Lions have been horrible since 1957. I was 9 years old when they won the national championship before the Super Bowl. They've been mediocre. I have my own theory on that because of the Ford family owning cars, and they didn't get football. They just played it as a business until finally the granddaughter is now doing some awesome stuff, putting money into the team. Mm-hmm. And Dan Campbell, I love, he's a passionate man who rises and encourages his group. And that's why they did so well this year. And
I was really rooting for the Lions, and not just because I hated the other three teams that were in. I was actually rooting for them. Yeah. Before we get into some of our other questions, I want to back up a little bit, as I'm sure some of our listeners have backed up to say, did he really just say he had a daughter on the 24th of November, out of work on December 1st, and opened up a practice in February? Is that correct? Yes,
that is correct.
And if you think about that timeline in 2023, 2024, it wouldn't happen.
Yes.
But back then, that is something that could have been done, right? Because the timeline that you did probably took a lot of effort, but it wasn't uncommon, right? That wasn't a very big outlier. That was something that just happened.
Yeah.
And I think some of our listeners are probably saying, how did that even happen? Nothing happens in a span of what is that? 3 months.
Nothing happens
in 3 months in veterinary medicine, especially opening up a practice. Can you talk about that a little bit before we go on?
Sure, I'd be glad to. actually, the interesting thing is, I was fired and I quit. It all happened the same day. Mm-hmm. And we had to sit down and really have a soul-searching conversation with my first wife. And, you know, Jenny was 7 days old, my first daughter.
Yeah.
And we ended up partnering with a fellow who was looking to build a satellite practice in his original practice. He was a good businessman. And he brought me on as a partner in his satellite practice. And so he really helped a lot of set up the business side of it. And I was always good with people and clinical diagnostics and some surgery also. So basically, it was a satellite practice for about 4 or 5 years, and then I bought out his share. Mm-hmm. But basically, I really was fortunate to be able to start it. It was rough going for a while. I did find out that my oldest daughter, Jenny, who now has 5 children of her own, she learned flexibility really early. We were changing diapers at McDonald's, a block from where the practice was started. And again, it was really, except for my partner, he was a partner in name only. I was doing all the work and making half the money. And then that's when I realized, well, I should really buy him out and make all the money, And it all worked out because he really was okay with that too. So I think it was 4 or 5 years later, but once again, I got it off the ground thanks to his business expertise and my great rapport with people. I actually went into a practice area where it was known for cheap practices, really inexpensive practices. Mm-hmm. And I charged top dollar because that's what I learned previously, actually from Attila the Hun. And I knew that I had quality medicine to give them and diagnostics. And I had friends at other practices locally said, oh, that'll never work. I said, watch me.
Yeah.
And it did. And mm-hmm. it became a very strong practice because it was quality medicine and surgery. And it was not cheap. But again, I had wonderful, loyal clients that came in. And I got a lot of referrals word of mouth because that personal touch was not there in those cheap, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am practices where they just run them in, run them out, type of thing, like a car wash. So,
Or what's that triangle? You can have it. It's either you've got fast, cheap, or good, and you can pick two.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes, I like that.
So your role in this profession for veterinary technicians, how do you see the profession as a whole right now? Like coming up from the 70s and the 80s all the way up till now, how do you view the profession? Like, are there things that we still need to work on?
Yes.
Give us your thoughts on all that.
I love this profession. I have some friends that are national leaders in this profession that I've met throughout the years. My network is pretty strong, and a lot of your speakers are friends of mine, and so I have given myself the title of Braveheart. And I don't mind mixing it with veterinarians. I'm more tactful today than I was when I was in my 30s and 40s.
Aren't we all?
But I also know that the issues are often more at the veterinarian level than at the technician level. I've seen such an evolution in this great profession of yours. When I first started, it was like, so many of my students over the years are introverts and kind of quiet and fearful of having dialogue with their doctor about paying better or, yes, sir, I will do that, type of thing. And without having good dialogue, like, why are we doing it this way? And I really tried to teach my students a little swag there, kind of like Coach Campbell with the Lions.
Mm-hmm.
Teach them some swag. Have conversations, don't be afraid to talk to them. We would do personality tests. That's one of the things I love to teach, personalities, team building, leadership. I had a whole series of lectures on that. And I would talk about negotiations and how important it was to say to the doctor, there's a reason I've learned some things. And is there a reason we're doing it this way? And it's not a bad thing to have that dialogue because you want to have a professional dialogue with your owners, with your practice owners, your doctors. Still, that didn't happen early on, and I probably didn't teach it as strong as I do now, but I've watched an evolution, and the evolution has been leadership in this great profession of yours. To see the national leaders today, there are a lot of brave hearts out there, and I'm wearing a t-shirt that says Stronger Together. And I just really believe that I know that sometimes there's some civil war with what shall we call this national credential? Should it be technician or nurse? And I'll just say this, let's get the national credential because we need the national credential. Let's see if we can bring some similarities from both sides. I think they're after the same thing, both sides. I lean towards technician. That's me. You know, so those of you that like nurse, sorry, not sorry. but it's okay. You know, stay with your nurse, but let's see if we can merge our strengths together. There are strong people on both sides. Boy, if you can put it together, you don't need to have a civil war in this great profession.
Yeah.
Put it together and build strength on that. Because I will tell you, one of the things that I was able to do, recently I stepped down from the board of the Association of Vet Tech Educators. I was second, I was president-elect, but I've fallen in love with this wonderful lady, Teresa, and I have changed some of my life goals to spend more time with her. And so I stepped down. But at the time, I was vice president behind an awesome president, Jennifer Serling, doing wonderful things. And one of the things, I was the first Association of Vet Tech Educators to be put on the American Association of Veterinary Medical Colleges board as a non-voting member. And the CEO at the time, he has recently stepped down, but he loved the fact that I'm not shy, and I would bring strong concepts to these deans of vet schools. And it's just, I see some changes coming. The CEO kind of encouraged it because of COVID, that perhaps they needed to look at redoing some educational things at the vet schools, including teaching the doctors about technicians in the veterinary healthcare team. So I was really happy that I could be on that board for a while. I did step down. Jen Serling stepped up, and she's even better because she's the first technician to be an educator on the AAVMC board. And she's not shy to bring it either. And so it's been kind of neat to watch that journey. I think if I could wave a magic wand over all of my students and graduates over the years, have more swag. Don't be afraid to mix it professionally, not nastily. Don't scorch earth, but professionally, don't be afraid to ask the questions. Yeah. Why are we doing it that way? I've heard that there's a different way to do that. Would you like some input on that? I just went to a CE conference, and boy, there's something that I think we can do better with that. You know, listen, can we talk about a raise? I haven't had a raise for months, years, whatever it might be. So again, swag would be the thing I would like to see. From the doctor's perspective, and again, utilization, respect, pay. Those are the biggies. And, you know, when I look at, when I first started in the 80s, I think the starting wage for graduates of a two-year associate program was around $5 to $6 an hour. Guess what? You could go work at McDonald's out of high school for $5 to $6 an hour with benefits back then. Today, it's really kind of sad because the pay when I left Michigan, I saw my students going out between $14 and $16 an hour in 2001 when I went down to, well, actually 2004 is when I went down to New Orleans to start a program. It hasn't changed much. In fact, in some states, it's even less than that.
Right.
And guess what? You can go to work at McDonald's for $15 an hour with no education at all. So, so doctors, you need to learn how to pay your help a living wage and utilize them at the top of their license. I love that technology, that terminology that I've heard from many national leaders in your great profession, Jeff. And it's just been awesome to see that. I think there are changes coming, not as fast as I would like them, maybe not in my career or lifetime, but there's leadership that's got swag and is strong and professional. And there are brave hearts, other brave hearts besides me in your profession that's stepping up to play the game. And I think that the vet schools are more open. I'm seeing more and more vet schools partnering with technician programs. You know, Blinn partners with Texas A&M. I'm wearing my Texas A&M Aggie hat. And Our students actually do clinicals in the A&M Vet School their last semester, in addition to being in private practice throughout the time that they're in the program. So, and we're seeing more and more vet schools. I know that in New Jersey, they've started. There's a veterinary technician program that has started. One of my dear friends, Liza Rudolph, is, oh, what an awesome, I'm talking about, she is an awesome national leader.
Yes, amen.
And, you know, Liza has started the tech program with the blessing of the dean of the vet school that's not started yet. So that's going to be a partnership. And I think that what we're seeing with some of these partnerships like this, that's going to be sort of the template, if you will.
Yeah.
And I'm just delighted that it's Liza who is running interference to do a great job with the tech program that will partner strongly with the university that has the vet school coming up in the very near future. So
for sure.
So we just need to edumacate those doctors better about team, and respect, utilize, and pay your team, and you will make the money. In fact, you'll make more money if you pay them.
Yeah.
Because they will, we're talking loyalty. Campbell just has such loyalty with those Lions. Rookies that were all rookie, young team. So I'm digressing again, but I feel very strongly.
We have no time limits. You can digress all you want.
Yeah, absolutely. And your point is really well taken, because I've said on this podcast a number of times, I worked at Tufts University for about 4 years. And that was one thing I noticed, was that the way that they were doing things, like, I felt like the students and the interns and the residents really, really respected us, but the hospital itself did not function the way that an actual hospital would. And so I don't feel like they were well set up to then go into practice, whether it be getting out of vet school and graduating and just going right into general practice or going the internship specialty route. They weren't going to be set up to integrate well into a hospital because they didn't know anybody's roles. They didn't know what anybody could do, who did what. They didn't learn that in school because that's not how the school operated. And so it's actually really, really good to hear that might be some of the, because I've long said, like, a lot of what has to change is going to start in vet school. It's going to start with the veterinarians, and it's going to start in vet school. And so it's, I'm really glad to hear you bring that up, because I think that's one cog in the wheel, but it's a big one.
Yes. I try to give my students some definitions. I love to have them start doing critical thinking, not buying everything that people are selling. You know, it's like, oh, it was on the internet, it must be true. let's get critical thinking going here. And so a couple of the definitions that I try to teach them is ignorance and stupidity. Ignorance is you don't know what you don't know. And I'll tell my students, even if you've worked in practice before, there's some things you don't know what you don't know yet. You're ignorant, and that's okay to be ignorant. Stupid is you know what you know and you still do the dumb thing, you know? and so doctors that come out of vet school today are ignorant because they're not being taught in vet school about the team, about the awesome AVMA accredited graduates who now have a license, a credential. And boy, that has to change. They have to learn not only about them, but work with them before graduation.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing the dean of the vet school at Ohio State is doing some awesome things. I totally respect and admire him. He's a precedent setter. And I think we're going to see some things because of his leadership with the deans. There's going to be some changes made, hopefully, down the road. And I like the fact he's actually bringing in graduate technicians to work with his doctor students to teach them how to be a team. And I think there was even an AVMA Journal article about his Ohio State program a few months back about that. And I love that. That's breaking the mold that's been ignorant too long.
Yes.
The problem becomes when doctors get out into practice, stupidity occurs. And that's where sometimes we see toxicity with the teams. You know, it's like, I know that you but I'm not paying you. So you better step up, you know? And it's like, where did you learn that? That is such bad bad leadership on a team, you know. And again, I think that that's changing also, especially in programs. We're seeing more and more teaching of team and leadership. Not enough yet, in my own humble opinion, but I wish AVMA would require that in the accreditation process more. So AVMA, if you're listening, have more soft skills that are required, not just clinical and academic skills of of the AVMA accredited program, so that they start to teach and model those things to the students before they graduate. We need more graduates coming out with swag, ready to not be obnoxious, but just to not take it when it's ugly from ignorant or stupid people. And and doctors, I'm not calling you all ignorant and stupid, but if the shoe fits.
Yeah, don't clip him saying doctors are all doctors are ignorant and post that on the internet.
Right. Yeah.
Post it with context.
We need
context.
We need full context. So you talked already about, you know, kind of going from having your own practice into vet tech education, and that's obviously a major change. It would be a major change going from practice to just going to work at a vet school and doing veterinary education, let alone vet tech education. And I'm wondering, like you said, you talked about hiring on a technician. I forget the name, her name that you had mentioned, but I'm wondering, like, did you see in her, like what, or in just the profession in general, what kind of, because I can only imagine the few programs that actually existed in that time and truly the few technicians, credential technicians, like what did you see that said there needs to be a future here or I need to be a part of it or what have you?
Oh, that's an awesome question. Scales had to fall from my ignorant eyes because I originally, when I started practice, we had hired with in the newspaper, you know, we asked for a receptionist to start with. And then when it got a little bit more crazy, I wanted to have somebody that knew what they were doing. And I grew up at Michigan State with technicians. There were technicians being taught at Michigan State.
Yeah, they had
time.
A program. Yeah.
And there were two, Gail and Kathy. We called them super techs. And I was blessed because the guy that helped me partner to set up the satellite clinic, he had Gail working for him, and she became the first president of NAVTA. So if you want a little Trivial Pursuit stuff, her name was Gail Woltz. If you look that up, she was the first president of NAVTA. I was a brand new program director in 1981. I went to my first Vet Tech Educators Association conference at Michigan State, and that was when NAVTA was created, was 1981, and Gail was the first president. So I had an opportunity to work with her in practice, and she was moxie, she was swag, and her boss was a smart businessman, and he let her have moxie and swag with him, and I thought that was pretty cool. But basically, so when I was in practice and I went from a receptionist, I said I'd like to get a technician, and so I hired one named Mary. She said she'd stay for a year. She was traveling all over the country. She loved it. She went to Michigan State. She was in Hawaii for a year. She came back to Michigan, and she got hired by my practice. I started her what I paid was so poor back then. And then she left a year later, and she said to me in the exit interview, she said, "You're going to have trouble with Carol and the receptionist because she thinks she's a technician and she's not." And so after Mary left, I fired the receptionist. I had no staff. So I hired a receptionist out of a newspaper ad. And I thought, well, I'll try a medical assistant. And the medical assistant was horrible. She knew nothing about the labs that supposedly she learned about in school. And so after a while...
This is a human medical assistant?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Medical assistant, because I couldn't get any technicians. So... So I just knew how bad she was. I mean, I couldn't trust any of her lab work at all. So I had to send everything out. And so the veterinary conference for veterinarians and technicians was coming up in a few months, and I was loaded for bear. I went up there and I saw one of my professors, who most people didn't like him. He was tough, but he really liked me because I I was kind of a brown nose, and but also I was good because I was working on the weekends for a practice. And so it was Dr. Sawyer, the anesthetist there. And I said, so I'm looking to hire me the best out of a out of this class that's graduating coming up, Don. What would you recommend? He says, do you need somebody introverted or extroverted? Because if it's introverted, this is the person. If it's extroverted, this is the person. And then Julie Jones walked by and he said, oh, if you're looking for both, Julie would be the one. So I hired her. And she has become my pedestal technician forever. She did it all. You know, she knew when I was like stressed. She said, do you need a Coca-Cola, Dr. Harrell? You know, and again, she was just the opposite personality to me. She was detailed. She was methodical. She was a legal secretary before she came in to become a technician. And she just loved the profession. And I was blessed to have her. So so basically, again, she helped me to grow my practice phenomenally because I let her loose because I saw what super techs Kathy and Gail could do in vet school. So that's kind of a long story, but I had to go through the medical assistant from human medicine first to realize there was no way. You know, she might have liked animals, but she just didn't. She didn't have the training or the hunger to be awesome. You know, and I've always tried to teach: be humble, be hungry. To my students, when you're interviewing, be humble, be hungry. You know. And so that's so important too, you know, to because if you can step up to the plate and just with humbleness and hunger, they'll see it and they'll get it, hopefully. So
yeah, absolutely. One thing that sticks out to me, I know we're going to go to break here in just a moment, but you mentioned in there the exit interview you had with that technician, and yes. This is 1970 something. Next year is going to be 30 years in veterinary medicine for me. I've had a few jobs. I've never had one exit interview. Dave, have you?
I've had one.
You have had one. Yeah. I hear people talk about them and I know the importance of them, but it's
sad because Mary brought it up to me. She said, I want to talk to you. I want an exit interview with you before I leave your practice. And I said, what's that? So I learned just, again, I was ignorant of exit interviews until Mary, my first technician, and she just laid it out in spades. You know, she significantly improved my practice income in the laboratory. Oh, my goodness. I even sent out blood work to compare to her blood work to make sure she was on track. Mm-hmm. I never told her that, but, you know, I double-checked and she was right on track. So that when I looked at the profit areas of the practice, all of a sudden I was calling for more lab work, doing better medicine. And people were buying it because these were their kids coming in, you know? So again, I
can almost envision in some ways back then being utilized more to the top of your credential because you had to do differentials. You had to do urine sediment under the microscope. You had to do, fecal flotations and, All the blood smears, all of the things that we learn how to do in school, but that you
and
don't actually do in practice anymore. Exactly. And so that's like truly like for, I think a lot of people that's lost a lot of the fascination, like, because, you know, you learn how to do that, but you never get to apply it. And that's something that used to just be done. And now it's not anymore. And I don't know. Anyway,
yeah, and before we are well, this is probably the longest we've gone before taking a break.
It's all good. We love it.
And before you give us yet another T-shirt quote, we're gonna go on a break here and pay some bills, and we'll be back after the break.
The Vet Tech Cafe is sponsored by BetterHelp. Caffeinators, at the Vet Tech Cafe, you know we like to focus on mental health. If you're struggling with depression, burnout, compassion fatigue, or any of the other mental health challenges we discuss on our podcast, getting professional help is a great first step.
We all need help with things like learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries, which empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major mental health challenges.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try.
Dave, I've used BetterHelp. I had really good success with it. I really liked that it was entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. You can also switch therapists at any time for no additional cost.
You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your therapist, and you'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions. They really make it easy for you to get the help you need.
Discover your potential with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/vettechcafe today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vettechcafe. It's time to invest in yourself. Be well, caffeinators.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Vet Tech Cafe. This is one of the few times we get to interview somebody that's older than Jeff and I, which is which makes us feel young. So
yes,
thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Dr. Jim, for being here. So we just had our ad for BetterHelp, and we always like to ask our guests how they manage their own mental health. So kind of going through the years, you were an adult when Jeff and I were kids, and we talk about this a lot in the 80s and 90s when we were growing up, mental health was not something that was discussed.
Correct.
And now it's very prevalent in society. How did you manage your mental health in those early years, and how are you doing it now?
Oh, that's an awesome question. I am a recovering workaholic perfectionist.
Mm.
And I'd say this to my students for years and years and years. I have said, especially if I'm in front of them, I'll say, okay, raise your hand if you are a workaholic perfectionist. I am raising my hand. And usually half to two thirds of the class would raise their hand. I said, if you're not raising your hand, you're probably not being honest about the whole thing. I said, veterinary medicine and veterinary technology, it's almost as if it's a niche place for workaholic perfectionists. And you take your work home. I took my work home. But see, I loved what I created and did because I had four programs that allowed me to have space to create. So even though, my family suffered, I loved to read. So when I did go home, I didn't shut it off. I would read, but I would try to make myself be a better professor, director, and so on. Leadership, John Maxwell's books, I would read a lot about leadership and so on. So for many, 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 many years, I was a workaholic. I didn't burn out because I just loved the students. To see a student start on day one and to see the finished product four semesters later, I've told my students before this, I'm hoping that the Blinn Dean, Elmer, I hope you're not listening, I would do this for nothing. Just don't tell my boss.
You know, because... We can cut that part out if you want. Yeah. I can edit that away.
But I love to watch the personal, professional development of a human being into from a shy, introverted person who may struggle with academics to this awesome technician in four semesters. So basically, I didn't burn out, even though I was a workaholic. But down the road, I started to develop some hobbies that I really loved. I collect silver coins. I read. I try to read not professional stuff so much. I love biographies, and I've read many biographies over the years. Lincoln was one of my favorites. Lincoln on Leadership was a great book. So those were kind of my hobbies that I tried to create. So today, I have learned to... I could have done better as a dad with my children. I have a really great relationship with one of my daughters and a not so great relationship with the other. But once again, I've learned a lot, and I am blessed truly to have Teresa in my life now, and she's my focus. I am balanced, and she's a retired teacher, and so we have a lot of time each day together, and we love that time together with each other. And that's kind of my mellow time is when I'm able. I have an apartment about a mile from her house, and she may not be happy that I'm saying this, but I'm saying this now on national radio. We're looking possibly to get married later in the fall. So
nice. And, congratulations.
But again, it's been a journey to learn balance. I'd say in the last 5 years, I've done a lot better with it. But it didn't come easy because I was so engrossed in being the Braveheart and doing more and doing better and blah, 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 you know. But again, I was thinking, what am I modeling to my students? Am I showing them balance? And so I've been teaching soft skills better about mental health, self-awareness, you know, to a little bit better now in the last 5 years than previously in my journey as
did
a
you,
professor.
Did you find that it was hard in the 80s? Did you find it was hard to like if you were stressed or depressed or anything like that, did you find it was hard to like get help or to do anything about it?
I was really blessed. I got so into.
Sounds like you were too busy to actually deal with it.
Yeah, exactly. But had I gone looking, there wasn't anything.
Yeah,
around,
there wasn't anything you know? There.
No.
Yeah.
I see that the vet schools are starting to do a little bit more about self-care. Mm-hmm. And I think some of the tech programs are looking at it. AVMA, if you're listening, it should be one of the fundamental skills that are taught and looked at by site visit teams with self-studies. Because I think it's really important. And I think they're wising up a little bit more now to see the importance of this. I mean, when we talk about the suicide rate, especially since COVID in both your profession, Dave and Jeff, as well as my profession, it's sad to see that, especially wonderful doctors that we never knew because they didn't fess up or they weren't transparent. And it saddens my heart. I do from a couple when I was in Michigan years ago, committed suicide. And it's like, how did that happen? I mean, they had successful practices. Why? You know, so again, self-help and self-awareness is so important today.
Okay. Let's get back into some more serious questions. So you're a huge supporter of our profession. It's been documented well over 40 years. Why is our profession important to you as a doctor?
I have seen the difference that licensed, credentialed veterinary technicians make in a practice, in my practice. And when I see the leadership of some of these awesome technicians go out from my program or other programs and making a difference, when doctors all of a sudden become knowledgeable of what technicians really can do, when they are paid, respected, and utilized, it's just, I love to see the journey. In some ways, I feel like one of my favorite movies is Braveheart, you know, and I feel I'm the rally guy, and I'm not bragging about that. I'm not afraid to mix it because, and I've talked to doctors, and I'll just say, are you aware of the Dennis McKernan and I are great friends, and Dennis he taught with me at Penn Foster. Also, we've been friends. When I started the program in New Orleans, I met Dennis early on, and I bugged him a lot because I have swag, and and we became the best of friends. And I just know that he remembered. He sent me an email once, and he said, "Jim, AVMA journal article. Let's look at it. We've been talking about, you and I have been talking about this for years." And it was when they talked about that the typical graduate credentialed veterinary technician brought $93,000 to the bottom line of a practice. And now it's more today. I think it's like $160,000 or something like that. And he said, this is things we've been talking about for years. And now they need to do a follow-up survey. AVMA, so if you're listening, do a follow-up survey. Because once again, I think it's maybe even more than $160,000. That a typical college-trained, licensed veterinary technician can bring to a bottom line for a practice. If that's the case, they should get a raise. I mean, you know, if they're bringing $160,000 in, how about we start them out at $20 to $25 an hour? You know, and again, I'm throwing that out there, and it's so important to see that the ignorance is gone through education. Or through experience, seeing what a technician can really do in a program or in a practice, and again, I'm hoping that that's answering the question. I kind of went off.
I
on
believe
a
so. Yeah,
there.
I think so. Yeah, you know, I thought of a Dave. You mentioned T-shirts earlier. I thought of a great T-shirt right then. make your technicians purred. Paid, utilized, respected.
Love it. That's awesome. I would get one of those. If that's an available T-shirt, I'll get it. I'm a T-shirt guy. I'm a hat guy.
I love it.
I'm a hat guy and a T-shirt guy. So that'd be awesome.
Kind of to piggyback off of your answer there really leads me to my next question, which is when you have conversations with your DVM colleagues about this stuff, about paying your technicians, utilize them, respect them, how is that received? I imagine there are some that can get on board with that, and I imagine there's a lot of pushback too.
I refer back to the movie Braveheart. In my younger days, I've come to pick a fight.
Yeah.
But I don't come to pick a fight anymore. But I really try to hear them. I'm a much better active listener today than when I was younger. I had to work at that because I'd much rather talk than listen. But I've learned how to actively listen, and I will listen for where are they needing a technician that they're not using them. And then I will talk to that and address the issues of pay and utilization. And respect comes with pay and utilization anyway. And, what are you paying your technician these days? And I just want to hear them what they're saying. Oh, well, I really can't afford. Well, do you know what all the skills are that a technician can utilize? And probably I will send you guys a link if you want to the ABMA CBTEA list of every graduate from an ABMA accredited program must be knowledgeable and successful at these skills. Doctors, they're so ignorant of what can be done. They just think that vet assistants and vet techs too often, because they haven't been taught any differently, are the same, and they're not.
Well, it's also because they hire assistants and call them techs.
Yeah, exactly.
And then don't understand why they can't do the skills that a technician
can. Amen. And title protection needs to come state by state, sadly, but when you have leaders in a state, there's going to be some changes, which is good, I try to have dialogue tactfully but strongly to educate, because my job is not to go to pick a fight anymore. I was younger, I liked fighting dialogue wise with my ignorant friends.
Debating, yes.
That's a better word. But I've become more tactful in my seasoned years. And if I can listen careful enough, I'm going to find out where they really need they need to utilize better and pay better. That's usually the case then. So
yeah, it's amazing, like you just said there, with listening to what they're saying, like actually, and not just talking over, not just yelling, but listening to what they say and then using that as a foundation for the discussion. I know our profession needs much more listening and much less talking over. Yeah.
Well, and that's your soft skills that you're,
exactly.
Being a good listener is in half the time, I see it all the time. People are just listening and waiting to the point where they can interject their story about what they feel about this instead of actually listening to what the other person says.
Yeah.
And I see that all the time, and it's so frustrating to just in after years and years of having those conversations, you've probably, I don't want to say you've lost your fight, but you have shifted your energy towards knowing what's going to happen or know the excuses and the results that you're going to get from that conversation to say, yes, I know that's what you're going to say, but here's the argument against that. So you've become a much more seasoned and knowledgeable debater in terms of that.
Yeah.
Better. Thank you. It's true. It is true. Yeah.
So how has vet tech education changed during your time? I realize you've been teaching for longer than Jeff and I have been technicians. So how's the curriculum? How has all that changed in the years that you've been teaching?
It's been fascinating to watch, and it's been better long haul.
Mm-hmm.
It's more well dissected than before. When I first started teaching, there were no technician books. Dennis McKernan's first edition, that was a beautiful relic that should be in an institutionalized museum somewhere.
I have one somewhere.
My goodness. And I did, but I didn't keep it. And there were some before that, but they weren't really that good.
Right.
But, you know, when I think back, so many of my adjunct faculty and myself, we were teaching out of vet school books, hopefully not all of the stuff that we learned ourselves. We had to break it down into technician, not simplify it, but just make it to the technician level, you know?
Yeah.
And
applicable to what they were going to do.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the key words I was looking for. And, you know, but then all of a sudden we started having books coming out. And now we have such amazing textbooks. I mean, when I look at the textbooks being written by technicians for technicians, and I think that that's been a tremendous change. You know, also, when I first started, there were 32 AVMA accredited programs throughout the country. Michigan had three, of which one is now gone. And now there's 220 plus AVMA accredited programs all over the country. And more colleges are looking to open up programs. And more distance education programs are coming. I think COVID really showed that quality education can be done as long as we can get the hands-on skills at a local veterinary practice. Okay. So those have been some interesting changes. I have also watched that most programs back in the day, the directors were all 100% veterinarians. And they had to have a technician because that was part of the AVMA requirements, one FTE of both. And I remember when I had an awesome, Lori Renda Francis. I don't know if that's a name that brings a bell for you, but I'm going to bring her up at the end. But Lori was a student of mine, and she came, she was an awesome, she was a goal setter, a hard worker. She went out and she was in clinical practice locally. She came back as an adjunct faculty. She became my right-hand partner in crime at Macomb in Michigan. And at one point I just said, Lori, you have so much better managerial skills than I just want to teach. How about we switch spots? Well, our dean was fine with that. But when we went to our first AVTE conference, oh my goodness, one of the other directors in Michigan came up and said, how could you have a technician become a director? Oh, she was just all over us. And I said, tough, for, you know, sorry you feel that way, not sorry. You know, that really broke a relationship with that other person because Lori had those incredible skills to organizational skills, I should say. I'm kind of a loose cannon in some areas, but my heart is really to be with the students, you know. And so we would switch. And actually in the four programs I've been in, I have stepped down as director to allow a technician to step up. And carefully so. I mean, I was pretty picky with when sure. I started that program in New Orleans, I was picky on the technician coming in. And we switched just before I went to Penn Foster. And then at Penn Foster, after 6 or 7 years, we switched. And then literally when I met Jessica, who is the now director at Blinn, she just needed encouragement. She was already doing such awesome things in the way of management and organizational skills. And I said, why are you not the director? Why did they hire me? And she said, oh, I was too nervous. I don't think I could ever do that. I said, you're doing it. And so when we switched, she's just, Blinn actually won the student organization. That's the NAFTA student organization of the year last year. It's like the national championship for student organizations because
the national student chapter.
Yeah.
Because awesome. Of Jessica's leadership. And so, so once again, you know, it's just neat to watch that evolution. And what I'm starting to see is more and more programs have director becoming a technician. It's about 50-50 now. And also, what I am seeing is more and more technicians are being hired to teach. Who better than technicians to teach technicians, you know? Right. And they're doing the FTE with part-time veterinarians. And, I think that's awesome. Because once again, who better to be in the classroom academically and clinically than people that have journeyed through an AVMA-accredited program, been out clinically and doing some things? Who better than a vet tech specialist to teach some of those right. incredibly awesome skills, even though entry level is all we need for AVMA? But again, I'm those are some of the trends that I'm seeing, and those are wonderful, positive trends. In some ways, the technology has been both a blessing and a curse. I'm not going to go into too much detail there, but
sure,
it's good in a way because they can do some asynchronous teaching now of some basic fundamentals, as long as they can do the hands-on in the lab or out in the clinics to follow that up with good mentoring from a credentialed technician or veterinarian, but it's better if it's a credentialed technician. So you know, yeah, that's basically all I'll really say about the online. Distance
sure.
learning is awesome if we have a good hands-on program with good mentoring and teaching and accountability from a professor technician. So,
one of the questions I was thinking of when you first started talking about this was, you know, back early on, were there veterinary technician educators, or was it all veterinarians that were doing all the teaching?
There were some, but not directors. So they
right.
would be hired as the number two person.
Mm-hmm.
I never considered when Lori Renda Francis became my full-time partner in crime, we sat down together and I said, Lori, you are my partner. I am not your boss. I want your feedback and input as we continue to develop this program together. And I always wanted to get out of the way of leadership to step up. And that's good modeling also for our students. And Lori,
yeah.
Oh my goodness, Lori took it, you know, and when I remember when we switched spots, I stepped into just being professor and she was the director.
Hmm.
We would have strong dialogue because she had a vision for doing stuff. And I said, oh, hey, that's my kid. I let you adopt my kid. You can't do that with my kid. And she said, hey, it's my kid now. You gave me your kid. And so we'd have strong dialogue. But the cool thing is, the things she did took our program to a level I never thought possible as a veterinarian. And I've seen that in the other three programs that I also have stepped down to teach. Well, I don't even consider it stepping down, because in every one of those programs, I said the same thing to my partner in crime. You are my partner. I am not your boss. I want your feedback for this great profession of yours as we build this together. And
yeah,
so
absolutely. I was thinking, you know, you mentioning the other program director that, you know, said, how could you, you know, do this swap?
Yeah.
How could you have a technician in that role? And I, you know, just kind of off the top, I would think my response would be, what about me? What as a DVM did I learn in school that makes me any more qualified than this person? Like there is
yes.
no, you didn't take any courses that, that it has to be that credential to.
That's true. Correct.
To, you know, like, so why not?
Yeah. And again, who better than someone who's walked the journey through education?
Exactly. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Now can teach that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
It's awesome.
Absolutely.
One final question I have for you. You were mentioning New Orleans, and I scroll back to look at your timeline. You were in New Orleans when Katrina hit. So how did that impact your program? And
oh, I'm so glad you brought that up.
Not to make a whole other podcast episode out of this, but
I can come back. No, just kidding. I went down to start a program in New Orleans because it just happened, and
yeah.
I wanted to be in the South. And so my program that I developed, this was the second program. This is the first one I ever built myself. I got into a program that had already been set up poorly and needed a lot of ramping up. But New Orleans was my first baby that I built from scratch. And the first day of class, if you can even believe this, was 4 days before Hurricane Katrina.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow.
I had 20 students. We took a picture the first day. We had an anatomy lecture and a soft skills lecture. And then Katrina hit the following Monday, and I missed. They were gone for 8 weeks.
Yeah.
Now, the thing that happened was it pushed me into online learning and teaching online. That freaked me out. But I had a vision. I said, we are graduating this class on time in spite of Katrina.
Yep.
And so we did some things online I'd never done before, and it stretched me, but it was so worth it. got me ready for Penn Foster later, totally online.
Sure.
But the interesting thing is 20 scattered, 12 came back, 7 graduated. And it's just those, and they were all not the leaders. They were all shy people that came back. There were 2 leaders I lost forever, 2 to Texas, and 1 actually came through a program in Texas. And but it was just interesting. And then we started to build numbers from there, you know, and that was the Katrina class. And the next class was all sweet-spirited introverts. I call that the Moxie class because they learned a little swag from me as they went through. And it was just neat to watch the journey. But yeah, that pushed me into technology, my students also. But they graduated and they all passed the VT&E 100%.
Nice. So nice.
It's kind of the Detroit Lions.
Yeah. He says to a guy wearing a Packers shirt. Yeah.
I thought it should be the Packers and the Lions for the championship.
That would have been
to
great.
See who would go to the Super Bowl.
So, that would have been great.
It was so close both times. So anyway,
we'd be having a different conversation if that was the case.
Dave, that's to answer your question. It pushed me into technology, but it worked. And at the campus that they were going to have the program, every building was 6 feet underwater, including the library, except for the building that held my office and all of our new equipment.
Wow.
And then we moved to the North Shore on the other side, and that's where we kept the program for quite a few years till I left to go to Penn Foster.
So, that's crazy. So as we are now well beyond our hour.
We're doing all right. We're doing all right.
Is there anything that we haven't touched on today that you want to get out to our listeners? Let's see. Swag, Braveheart, pay, utilization, and respect. Am I missing any? Those are the t-shirts we're going
to
make.
I want to encourage each and every veterinary technician listening to this. This isn't about me. This is about you. And you are better than you think. You are stronger than you think. You bring to the table so many assets that veterinarians too often are now ignorant of. Use a little bit of swag to talk to them and educate them. Doctor, I've been taught how to do that. Can I do that for you? That was something that I learned many years ago from another technician educator. Can I do that for you? I've been trained to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Step up. You know, leadership is taken. It's never given. And I love seeing leadership from especially the shy ones, the introverted ones, which made many of my best technicians I've trained and educated over the years are introverts. And not that extroverts like me can't make it up. They make it well with the clients, but to see the introverts also, you all have perfectionistic tendencies. I know introverts.
You're talking to 2 introverted perfectionists right now.
I love it. I love it. And I should send you my personality test.
Yeah.
We will take it.
So anyway.
Yeah. So we ask all our guests this next question, and actually I think at least 3 or 4 people when we've asked them this have suggested you.
Thank you.
So is there a person, and I know we were talking about this kind of off air during our break, but is there a person you'd like to see us interview in a future episode or a topic that you think we should talk about?
Yes. The immediately comes to mind the president-elect for the Association of Vet Tech Educators, Trish Gorham, is the director for St. Pete's multiple programs, online as well as face-to-face. Trish is not only an awesome leader, and she steps up. She has swag. She's a brave heart for this great profession. She's also on the AVMA CBTEA that accredits programs.
Mm-hmm.
And Trish knows the inside workings, and she works very close with Jen Serling. She would be awesome. Have you had Liza on before?
Yes.
And we're actually going to have her on again once
the program's
off the ground.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah,
she, oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. So, hopefully later this
just
year. Yeah.
Dynamite. And I'm going to give another name, Lori Renda Francis. Lori was my go to amazing leader. And when I stepped down, when I went into the classroom 100% and she became the director, She took the program to levels I never thought possible. Lori has been on NAVTA. She was part of that NAVTA vet assisting stuff to get it off the ground. She literally was the first technician to ever sit on the American Animal Hospital Association board. She's just been phenomenal over the years. Humble, strong leader.
And she's at App State, right down the road from me.
Yes, yeah. She's tiny dynamite. And if there was ever a street fight, I would want her on my team.
Tiny mite.
So she would be really, really good also, I think.
Yeah.
Cool.
So those would be two that stand out to me.
All right.
All right. Now, Dr. Jim, we are now down to your would you rather question. Are you ready for it?
Sure.
All right. So you got to pick number one, two, or three, and I'll give you the question that corresponds with that.
Oh, I pick a one, two, or three.
Yes. Yeah. I'm not going to read you all the questions.
I thought this was multiple choice. Sorry.
No.
Let's go with two.
All right. Would you rather every time you hear a song, you have to either sing with it or dance to it? Which one are you going to do?
Sing. I had total knee on both my left and my right knees this last year. And
so Teresa, singing is your only option. Yeah.
And Teresa was my caretaker. And so when I came out of anesthesia from the first one in March, as I rolled past her waiting in the waiting room, I sang to her, "Wild thing, I think I love you, but I want to know for sure." She's very introverted and very embarrassed. But anyway, I would rather we're going to take some dance lessons, Teresa and I. But
nice.
I would rather sing right now.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
fair enough.
I think as two introverted people, Jeff and I would probably need quite a few beverages to do either one of those things.
I don't know if it plays at a wedding, I will dance to it, but I would much prefer to sing.
I love it. That's good.
All right. Prefer to watch.
Yeah. Either way. Well, Dr. Hurrell, thank you so much for taking some time out to come talk to us about all this stuff. It was just an awesome discussion. Hopefully our paths cross in person at a conference down the road and we can actually shake hands and have a conversation. That'd be great. But thank you so much for everything you have done for all of your graduates, all of your students over the years, and for our profession as well. We genuinely appreciate it. And we really appreciate the time today.
Thank you so much, Dave and Jeff. I'm honored to be on to talk with you. And I have a couple of veterinarians. I have to look up their names that I would maybe encourage you to think about. They're pretty passionate about technician utilization and pay also.
Absolutely.
That's the rare occasion we get a veterinarian on is when they talk about us.
Dr. Lester is one of them. And he's in the monthly veterinary business journal.
Is that Bill Lester?
I think it's Bob Lester.
Bob Lester.
Yeah. He would be dynamite. Oh,
okay.
I met him at a conference and we just hit it off immediately. And he's great, passionate about technician utilization. So
nice.
Gotcha. Okay, cool.
We'll put him on the list too.
Yeah.
I would love to meet up with you guys at some point if I get out to any of the conferences. I'm still Braveheart. I'm just, I'm taking a lot of my energies into this relationship with this wonderful lady.
Yeah, absolutely. As you should.
That's your self-care, right? That's your self-care.
Baby. Yes.
There you go.
Absolutely. Well, caffeinators, thank you very much for tuning into another episode of the Vet Tech Cafe. We hope you enjoyed this one and we will talk to you again soon.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Hello, caffeinators. We wanted to thank Dog Days Consulting for managing our social media and helping with the interior design here at the Vet Tech Cafe. They don't just do social media, they can help you identify your brand through brand coaching. The founder is a CVPM with 15 years experience in veterinary practice management. They are a small business proudly serving the veterinary community and we are thrilled to be working with them. Check them out at www.dogdaysconsulting.com. Hey, caffeinators! We would like to thank you for listening to the Vet Tech Cafe podcast today. As everybody is well aware by now, we often talk about difficult issues that face our profession. In addition, we chat with colleagues and leaders in our field who have strong opinions of these issues. Those opinions expressed by either Dave or Jeff as the hosts, or those opinions expressed by our guests, are their opinions alone and do not represent any other person, business, institution, or any other entity inside or outside of the scope of veterinary medicine. If you have any questions relating to this, please email us at vettechcafe@gmail.com or visit our website, www.vettechcafe.com. Lastly, whatever platform you utilize to hear our dulcet tones, please rate and review our podcast and like and follow our Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn pages as well to see what we're up to. From all of us at the Vet Tech Cafe, have yourself a great day.